You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on in and happy Thursday to you. NBA Draft Day here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This is the Locked On Syracuse Podcast, Tyler Aki and Tim Leonard. Don't forget, there is the NBA Draft Live Show today with Chad Ford, Rafael Barlow, Locked On NBA host John Corrales will also be live with them. I don't know if you've seen the set, Tim, but it looks fantastic.
Cool. Yeah.
They did a beautiful job with that. So be sure to tune into that on the Locked On NBA on YouTube today, and be sure to watch our coverage starting at 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. So we've got a lot of Syracuse stuff to get into today. Boeheim's Army with a big win. Also, we're going to start to dip our toe into the conference realignment talk because that's become a pretty hot topic lately. Tim and I will flesh that out a lot more on tomorrow's show as well. So be sure to subscribe. You'll get that thing first thing in the morning in your podcast feeds. Also, we're going to continue our countdown. We're going to do it. We're down to number 2 on the most important defensive lineman list. It's kind of down to 2 people at this point. I think people kind of know, so stay tuned for that. We'll reveal who number 2 is. But we start with Boeheim's Army, a dominant performance, their best performance so far in the TBT. It was pretty cool to see a team win. It felt like you were getting contributions everywhere, and it shows how good this team can be when everyone's clicking and everyone's sort of together.
Yeah, I mean, how about Chris McCullough last night? Just looking through, I mean, he finishes with 19 points, and we got a good tweet. I should have pulled it up. I'll maybe pull it up as we're going here, but someone tweeted back at us and said that you can tell why Kevin Belby really wanted Chris McCullough on this team.
I believe
for a while.
Was our guy, Caleb Phillips,
yes,
who said that.
I think
but I don't
so.
Want
Shout
to
him.
Misattribute that tweet, but no, I was thinking the same thing. I was going to bring the same thing up because, yeah, it was Caleb. But yeah, you saw it play out offensively, defensively. He had at the end of the game, he airballs a 3, but what does he do? He goes down and gets a great chase down block on the other end. It was an unbelievable little sequence there, but yeah, you can kind of tell. And he started to play a little more physical too.
Yeah, and CJ Fair and Devo have been very good off the bench. I mean, looking at the plus minuses from last night, CJ Fair and Kiefer Sykes had the 2 best at plus 16. Devo's a plus 8. Obviously, everyone was pretty much a plus last night. But you're right, it was a team win. Everyone contributed, and this team is really probably the deepest TBT team ever, I would say. I don't know how you can get much deeper than this, and they lost a player who they thought they were going to have in Chukwu, who I'm sure would be playing as well. But it seems like I was originally saying maybe lean into more of the crunch time lineup earlier and start the guys that you brought in, those ringers, those Tyrese Rice, DeAndre Kane, DJ Kennedy types. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they just have 9 or 10 guys that are all pretty even, and that's their strength, is that they're not going to get tired here. This was their third game in a little bit of a window. Now they get a break, but if they win Saturday, they turn around and play Sunday, and then they would play Tuesday in the championship if all goes well here. So maybe you use this bench that they have, because I don't think any other team is sniffing the amount of quality players that Boeheim's Army has.
You know what's interesting is we're starting to see it pour in, and this might be the salty Syracuse fan base to a degree, but did you see the one tweet we got from Maz_Logic? One Syracuse player in the closing lineup, and he played one season for us. Just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. He played 16 games.
I get it. But guess what? They won the game.
Just like, win, baby.
How else are you supposed to feel? I get it might feel a little slimy to some. But if they're wearing orange and they have Boeheim's name across their chest, it's tough for me to be upset. It really is. And Lucas Satchel, one of our fine listeners, also replied, winning feels right, and that's the name of the game, and that's what it is. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many SU guys are out there in crunch time. The guys who did play for Syracuse that are sitting on the bench, the guys who went to Syracuse that are on the coaching staff, like Ryan Blackwell, like Sean Belby, like the GM Kevin Belby, they all get paid for doing it. And guess what? I think like the amounts are pretty much the same, too. I don't have the breakdown of everyone's cash payouts.
All the players are 80, I think, and then Belby's like 60. I think Pope 60, and then the other coaches, Belby, Blackwell, might be 40, if I'm remembering correctly. It's something like that.
Yeah, so the checks cashed the same. And I just don't get what there is to be so upset about. There's very few pure teams, and maybe it was tough seeing a Bradley team who had home court last night and had a ton of Bradley guys on that team. And it's not like there's no Syracuse guys, but I get it, okay? You're a little frustrated that there's none out there in crunch time, especially when it was a blowout. I know the announcers tried to make it seem like it was a lot closer than it really
was.
I don't know if you noticed who was on the call of this game. Eric Collins.
Yeah.
The Hornets play-by-play guy, the hum-diddly-dee guy.
Right.
We didn't hear any of that for any Chris McCullough dunks or blocks, but if they made it seem like it was a lot closer, and maybe I get the frustration a little more from that end, because what we laid out was the perfect world is Boeheim's Army's up so much that you can let Devo take the last shot, or you can let CJ Fair or Andrew White or Malachi Richardson, one of those guys. And at the end of the day, Chris McCullough was the one who put it on ice with the two free throws. So I get the frustration. I just don't match it.
I struggle with this after the first game, and I've talked about it on the podcast, but what I keep going back to when this conversation gets brought up is I try to put myself in the shoes of Eric Devendorf and Kevin Belby, who have been doing this thing a while. They have not profited off it. You know, like, you only win money if you win it all. And they put in a lot of effort, a lot of time into it. And then you go into this year, and as Kevin Belby laid out on the podcast, go back and listen to it if you haven't already, he asked all the guys that we wanted him to ask. He does it every year, but he talked about Tyus Battles just signed a deal in Italy, Dion Waiters, Melo, whoever that you thought, like, oh yeah, where's this guy? Why can't we get more Syracuse guys? He tried to get him. So then you're in a position where you ask yourself, all right, do I round out the rest of the roster with guys that aren't really, they're over the hill, maybe you would say, or the older group that you've been using for a while? Or do you add some fresh faces and really actually give yourself a decent chance of winning this thing? Because honestly, if they didn't add these fresh faces, they would have had a good team, but not a great team, and not a team that would have blown out an opponent in the Sweet 16 and frankly kind of cruised to Dayton with the exception of the way they started that first game.
And let's be honest. I mean, you can say you want a pure Syracuse team all you want, but is a pure Syracuse team good enough to win this thing? I'm asking you because we know.
That's what I say, yeah.
Who is saying no? We know who's saying no. It's guys like Rakeem who have off-season obligations, or this is their time to rest and recover. Or as Kevin says, go to the 4th of July barbecue or take your family to Disney World. I don't know if a pure Syracuse team is good enough to win this thing. And I'd rather see them win. I'd rather see them win. And if that means finding outside influences, so be it. Grad transfers, as Kevin likes to call them.
If they hadn't added the outside influences, well, what would have probably happened is they would have lost by now, and people would have been on the same message boards, Twitters, whatever, and saying, I'm just done with this. Why do we get our hopes up every year? They're not good. They're never going to win. The roster isn't good enough. And now they've made the proper changes. So while I struggled to grasp that after the first game, and I know I've kind of teetered on this, I'm fully on board with them winning now, and I've gotten past the initial sort of frustration of not seeing a lot of Syracuse guys out there.
All right, coming up next, Tim and I are going to dissect what's going on with the SEC right now, because it is mayhem down south right now. And we will tell you what that means for Syracuse, because I think there's some interesting little trickle-down economics here that may impact the Orange, may impact where they end up down the road. So we will talk about that next.
All right, guys, are you looking for a new car part or a way to repair your car right now? Well, I've got the perfect solution for you. It is rockauto.com. Different from the chain store fronts that are often kind of tireless and meaningless exercises, going to those chain store fronts and then getting turned away at the door because they don't have the specific part you're looking for. Instead, skip that step. Go to rockauto.com today. It's a family business serving auto parts customers online now for 20 years. If you go to rockauto.com today, you can shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They always offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. I personally have used rockauto.com several times now. I can speak from experience, been happy each and every time. And when you go to rockauto.com today, be sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Again, put Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com.
We have to dive into this conference realignment thing. We've kind of brushed this by the wayside with everything going on with Boeheim's Army and football stuff, but let's just start with this, Tim, because conference realignment all of a sudden has become really real. When you see major football programs like Texas, like Oklahoma, and they're going to the premier football conference, things are going to get shuffled. And it's almost a little deja vu from what we saw with the old Big East when it crumbled and Syracuse was almost the Texas / Oklahoma of that operation. But now that you look at it, the NCAA's job is to crown champions in every sport except for football and preserve amateurism. And the SEC is realizing right now that they can kind of overtake the shadow leader of this entire thing because amateurism isn't as important anymore with the addition of name, image, and likeness. And when your job is to crown a champion in every sport except for football, because remember, that's reserved from for the college football playoff. That's an entirely different operation, separate from the NCAA. Yep. When that is the case, you almost don't have a job. And that's why I say shadow leader when talking about the NCAA. They really don't have that big of a job anymore. It is March Madness as their baby, and that's about it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're heading towards a world where the SEC and the Big Ten are 1 and 2, and really it's SEC 1, enter, Big Ten 2, enter,
right.
The rest. And unfortunately,
now, I will say this. The Big Ten is the most profitable conference of all the conferences. So that's worth noting. But like you said, the quality of athletics, and if there was to be some sort of mega merger somewhere, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, I think the SEC would overtake them.
Right, and I think the Big Ten will add teams. The question is, and what we really want to talk about today is ACC, right? Because that's what pertains to Syracuse.
Right.
And the ACC is in a tough spot here. This all comes down to money, as we all know. And when you dive into the media rights deals, for those that don't know, this has been an issue for the ACC for a little bit now, but they're locked into a 20-year deal right now with ESPN, which in hindsight was a terrible deal, because when you look at every other Power 5 conference between 2023 and 2025, their contracts, their media rights deals are up. And that's why we're seeing this realignment talk. And the issue is for the ACC, those media rights deals that the Pac-12 is set to get, or the Big Ten, the SEC, they're going to see a spike in their media rights deal by projected 45 to 65%, according to The Athletic. So all these other conferences, all these other Power 5 conferences have the leverage, have the opportunity to say, hey, come join us. We've got this new media rights deal coming. And because, frankly, the way that cable is shifting, live sporting events is everything for cable right now. College football in these conferences have a lot of leverage. So really what it comes down to for the ACC is they have to expand. One, because they want to keep pace, but two, and the most important thing is the money. And if they can expand, if they can add two teams, then that triggers the ability to renegotiate their contract and then actually reap the rewards that all these other conferences are going to benefit from once these contracts come around.
So I want to get into a little bit of a merger thing in a second, but you bring up the expansion of the ACC, and the name that is floated out there pretty frequently is West Virginia, because it feels like the Big 12 is going to come down a crumbling. It's going to feel like almost the old Big East, where it just kind of fell apart, and now it is what it is, but it obviously isn't what it used to be. There's no football or anything involved with that operation anymore. But when you look at some of these schools that could be quote unquote up for grabs now, when you look at the profile of the school, location, all that stuff, West Virginia, I think, makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're not going to have any sort of luck with Texas or Oklahoma, but how do you feel about West Virginia as a member of the ACC?
I think they'll probably get added at this point, and it depends. I mean, there's so many things, and we're still far off from the date. I like it, though. I think it makes sense for West Virginia geographically. That cuts down their travel costs, that they're spending a lot of money on travel right now to the Big 12. If they had their way, they would have joined the ACC, as many of us know, back when Syracuse and Pitt joined, but the ACC denied them because mostly because of academics, and also their fan base just really not meeting the standards of the ACC. But this time around, it makes too much sense for the ACC to add a team because of the media rights deal and the fact that they are into or locked into a deal for the next 20 years with ESPN. And then if they add a team, they can maybe renegotiate. So I think they'll be added, and then it kind of becomes who is team 16, because you need another team to even out the playing field there when you add team 15 being West Virginia. And I think a lot of people will assume Notre Dame. I mean, that is the biggest priority right now.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of, obviously, we know what the priority is, right? The priority is Notre Dame. But what is more likely in 2025, if the ACC is still up and kicking, is it more likely that we see Notre Dame in the conference or West Virginia?
More likely.
If there's only one.
Yeah, I mean, West Virginia, there will be one plus another move. It'll either be, because you have to get to even, I would say. I mean, that's ideal. So maybe a team leaves the conference and West Virginia is added and you're at 14, or maybe West Virginia plus a UConn or plus, I don't know, a Kansas. I mean, I thought about Kansas just from a basketball perspective because they are such a
favorite. It feels too Big Ten-y though, doesn't it?
It does, and I think
for Kansas.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten are going to go after Kansas, and they have more to offer because they have a better media rights package. And if you're Kansas, you'd probably stop everything and go to the Big Ten right now if you're them, considering where the Big 12 is and how they're in a dire strait. They need a lifeboat. So does West Virginia. So West Virginia is the most likely option. I think that will happen this time around. They've done some things to bolster their academics since, and they make a lot of sense from a perspective of geographically and also just the rivalry games that they already have built in. I mean, Pittsburgh and West Virginia, the backyard brawl, that'll get renewed. West Virginia-Syracuse, a little bit of a rivalry, as we know.
Right.
West Virginia-Virginia Tech has a rivalry name to it. And the ACC network just really wants marquee regular season matchups to sell to cable network providers right now. That is the big thing. Content is king, and these regular season matchups are a huge deal, so West Virginia gives them a little bit more of those.
And guess what? They're providing it to you everywhere. I mean, West Virginia is a really good athletic institution when you think about it. Pretty consistently good in football, pretty consistently good in basketball. There's stability there, and then they also have some of the other sports that they're solid at too. When I think of, like, I think they're pretty good at softball. And then baseball, like all these other sports, it all kind of comes into the fold. All right, coming up next, we are on to number 2 in our most important defensive lineman list. It's down to 2 right now. You have an idea of who the 2 names are, but we'll give you our rationale why the guy we've got next is number 2 and not number 1. That is coming up.
All right, guys, quick break to tell you about Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action right now. They have a great, very easy to use interface. You get in and out very quickly. Lines are updated as they come very quickly, and they really have some pretty good odds on there if you poke around a little bit. Every single sport is out there. I know the Olympics are going on right now. Maybe if you're chilling on a weekday night and you're watching the Olympics, throw a little coin on it. Just go over to their website, betonline.ag, put that in your mobile browser or just on a laptop, type it in a browser, it'll pop right up. And once you go there, sign up for a free account, super easy, super free to sign up for, and then you can put in our promo code that's locked on, all one word. Again, that promo code locked on, LOCKEDON. It gets you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So that is our promo code locked on at betonline.ag.
All right, we're down to the final 2 now in our most important defensive linemen for this week. We're doing it every single week. We're giving you a new positional group and counting them down 5 through 1. Most important, not the most talented, not the most skilled, most important. And today we land on McKinley Williams because he's the guy who clogs everything up in the middle. He's had a solid Syracuse career. He's another one of those guys who's back for a sixth year this year. Again, a lot of experience on this defensive line. He's one of those three sixth-year guys on the team and on the defensive line in particular. So when you look at McKinley Williams and when you look at what Syracuse defenses struggled with last year, it was the run game. And a lot of that comes down to what you do on the interior of the defensive line. So for me, that is why McKinley Williams slots in at number two, because this run defense has to be better from a year ago.
Yeah, and you can make a case maybe Dino would think of him as number one just based on the way that he talks about Bear. And after that 2019 season, it was such a disappointment. Remember, that was the year that Bear got hurt, and a lot of people that were around the Syracuse football program and even Dino said stuff like, that's a bigger loss than people are giving us credit for. I mean, that was a huge loss at the time. He wasn't spectacular last year like the rest of the defensive line, but now he enters another sixth year like everyone else that's kind of coming back on that line, and he's got a lot to prove here, and he's got a lot of opportunity to improve, and I don't really know where he fits into the puzzle, seeing his weight drop to 270, but we'll see. I mean, maybe that weight's off. It's just hard to say right now because we haven't really seen photos of him. You just see the roster come out, and you see him at 6'4", 270. And I know they like smaller defensive tackles, more athletic defensive tackles in the system, but that's a little odd to me.
And I think it's worth noting, okay, Bear had a really good year last year, too. When you look at the numbers, you saw a monster spike in 2020 for him, and he was doing it against all ACC competition. And you got to remember this, when you move to the 3-3-5, that defensive lineman, the interior defense, maybe at a little bit more of a disadvantage. Now, he's not going to get monster sack numbers. You rarely see a nose tackle do something like that. But he was in the backfield. He was disruptive, led the team with 8 tackles for loss last year. His solo tackles were way up. His tackle numbers in general, way up. He saw a spike of 10 going into that. So if he is going to continue to play at that level, that's good for Syracuse because he was fantastic last year. But you got to do it again. You got to do it again as a sixth year because the other guys that were around you, it felt like there was a little bit more that could have been drawn out. And I'm not saying it's Bear's fault. I think he did all that he could. But you also got to remember, he helped make some of those linebackers look good by clogging up certain holes that basically would funnel certain runners into the linebackers. And sometimes the linebackers weren't there to make the tackle either.
Yeah, I think we knew that the 3-3-5 was going to sacrifice the defensive line numbers a little bit. And I was totally fine with that because, again, Tony White's year one was a big check mark in a lot of people's eyes. And I think it should be in a lot of people's eyes because of what they had to deal with, how much they were out there, how little offseason they had, and they still forced turnovers and still made plays despite tons and tons of injuries on that side of the ball. The interesting thing is now, can these defensive linemen see a spike in numbers this year now that they've learned the system? Because I view it sort of as a make or break year. If they're not going to see a spike this year, then maybe we just have to come to expect that D-line with three guys there in most possessions, although they still put a lot of guys on the line sometimes, especially on third down.
Every important down, you're rushing four, whether right. It's Steve Linton or Jeff Canton or Michael. Yep. There's always going to be a fourth rusher. You hear that in a 3-4, you hear it in a 3-5.
Exactly.
3-3-5.
But I do think there's a case to be made, oh, the numbers were down because they didn't. It was their first year of the system. They played against all ACC competition, less games. If the numbers are down this year, then maybe we just have to come to expect that Syracuse is never really going to be up there in tackles for loss and sacks in the ACC under this regime.
Right. And I'm looking at McKinley Williams because a lot of what he does helps with the turnover forcing. If he is getting around the quarterback and pressuring and being disruptive in the backfield, you think about that as a quarterback, and that often leads to making some bad decisions or some tip balls on the exterior and getting him to roll out and making these quarterbacks uncomfortable. And I think McKinley Williams is a big reason why. I want to see it again. I want to see it again. And I think another thing that's important with him, he did have the 1 year in 2019 where he was injured, but outside of that, he's played in every single game of his college career. How about that for durability? I mean, yeah. That is something on the defensive. You don't see that very often on the defensive line, guys that you know are going to be there. And it's reassuring to know that you've got someone like that on the interior, because we don't know much about his backups. Let's be honest.
Yeah, we really don't. I mean, Curtis Harper's there. Joe Rendon, Terry Lockett, that's kind of in the mix. Maybe you'll see some Chris Elmore at nose tackle this year. It wouldn't shock me.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, those four guys I mentioned, just to rattle off their weights real quick, McKinley Williams is 270. Curtis Harper's 296. That's the biggest. Rendon, 268. Terry Lockett, who is just joining the team this year, is 261. That's your nose tackle weights. A little concerning, and it just makes me think, I wanted more clarity. Maybe is McKinley going to the defensive end spot if that weight is real? Because I look at Josh Black, he's 285. He's got 15 pounds on Bear. And I know they want athletic defensive linemen and defensive tackles in particular. They've always talked about that. And really, since Chris Sladen has left, they've always targeted those guys. And even in this 3-3-5, it has held true and even probably enhanced a little bit more in their desire for that from a nose tackle. You can see it in recruiting as well. But isn't all the talk about you got to match the physicality of these Clemsons and the ACC contenders?
Right.
And some part of me feels like Bear could still be a huge athletic force at 290, at 300, and that would be more ideal. And I don't know, maybe that weight's just off and maybe he's gained weight since then or what? Who knows?
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for number two for us here on our most important series. Wrapping up the defensive linemen tomorrow with, you can probably guess by now who's number one. It's a legacy year. Tim and I are going to dive into that on tomorrow's show. We're also going to continue our conversation about conference realignment, because guess what? Jay Billis said something super interesting about a potential SEC and ACC merger. So we will dive into all of that tomorrow on the show, and also give you most important defensive lineman number one on tomorrow's show. So for Tim, I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you guys on Friday.